The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn
Beck. You know, there are several things that are going on in Washington where we could really make a difference if we would just stop trying to, go for the big win instead of looking for the things where we could unite. You know, people say we should get money out of politics. Okay, we should get money out of politics. I agree with that. Now, how do we do that, and what does that mean, and our corporations, people, et cetera, et cetera? I don't know, because you got corporations on one side, you have unions on the other side. That's going to take us a long time to sort out. How about we do this? Let me give you this story over the weekend. Over the last several weeks, Mueller's team has been questioning George Nader. He is a Lebanese-American businessman with close ties to the UAE. Investigators are trying to determine whether the UAE tried to buy political influence during Trump's presidential campaign and administration. They're also trying to determine how George Nader has influenced White House policy. During the first few months of 2017, Nader had several meetings at the White House with Steve Bannon and Jared Kushner about American policy in the Persian Gulf. Nader is something of a Middle East mystery man. During the Clinton presidency, he was a back-channel negotiator with Syria. With Clinton's permission, he tried to secretly work out a peace deal between Syria and Israel. During the 90s, he also ran a magazine called Middle East Insight, which sometimes ran editorials by Middle Eastern leaders like President Mubarak of Egypt, Prime Minister Rabin of Israel, and Yasser Arafat. Well, this guy fell off the radar for a while, but in 2016, he somehow became an advisor to the Crown Prince of the UAE. After Trump's inauguration, Nader met with Elliot Broidy. He's a major Republican fundraiser who also owns a private security firm. With Nader's help, Broidy's security firm landed several hundred million dollars worth of contracts at the UAE. Last fall, Broidy had a private meeting with President Trump in the Oval Office. Afterwards, he sent a memo of the meeting to Nader at an encrypted email address. Apparently, we can decrypt this somehow or another. In the memo, Broidy said he advised the president to have a private meeting outside of the White House with UAE's Crown Prince. He also encouraged Trump to fire the Secretary of State, Rex Tillerson, because of his support for Qatar. A copy of this meeting memo was sent to the New York Times by someone, quote, critical of the UAE's influence in Washington. A spokesperson for Elliot Broidy didn't deny the memo's contents, but said that the Qatari agents hacked Broidy's computer and stole the memo. So what does any of this have to do with the Russia investigation? I have absolutely no idea. But here is my point of getting money out of politics. Can we start here? This is why President Trump, like all other presidents, needed to divest himself of all of his business holdings and interests. So we know for sure that there is no pressure point on the president. He's not trying to make deals and get special favors. It makes us feel good when everything is transparent. We need our president to be free of all influence. So now the president, he's caused trouble on his own because he's refused to get away from his business holdings. Just like President Clinton, or better yet, Hillary Clinton, she brought this on herself by having her foundation. That was trouble because, wait a minute, was she involved with Russia? Was she getting special deals elsewhere? We don't know. And I don't think we're ever going to know the real truth on either of these things. Why? Because there's too much money in politics.
It's Monday, March 5th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So I believe that if we are going to heal as a nation, we have to start having conversations and have conversations that make us uncomfortable. We're not learning anything if we're not uncomfortable. You know, it's nice to sit on the mountaintop, but on the mountaintop, no work is really done. You just have a nice view. It's nice to be up there once in a while. But it's down in the valley where all the work and the fruit is grown. So let's get into the valley. Let's get into the places, and we have uncomfortable conversations with people. but civil conversations and try to knit ourselves back together. There's two people that are trying to do this now. Justine Lee, I think, is it Justine or is it just, it's Justine, right?
That's correct, Glenn.
Yeah. Justine Lee and Tria Chang. Is it Tria? Let me make sure.
Perfect, Glenn.
Okay, good. All right. So you guys have started something called Make America Dinner Again, and you're trying to bring people together. You want to explain this?
Sure. Yeah. Make America Dinner Again is something we started or we conceived the day after the election. You know, we were feeling frustrated. We felt like no one was really listening or understanding each other. And as ordinary citizens, one thing we knew we could do is get people together, over a meal, people across the political spectrum, to share their stories, their perspectives, and really listen with the intent to learn. And we believe that ordinary citizens just like us can do the same.
So you guys started this, and I'm pretty sure you're not of the same political bent that I am. You live in San Francisco, right?
That's correct.
Are you able to have real conversations with people who really disagree? Are you able to get people together who are very diverse and actually have reasonable conversations?
Yes, and that's a huge priority for us, to get that diversity of thought in there. So it's not going to be the demographics of San Francisco, which are, you know, maybe we'd have 6 liberals and 2 conservatives. We
right.
really try to have a mix.
It's got to be hard.
It is hard, but it's so worth it. And we also make sure we don't only have Republicans and Democrats, but also libertarians and people who have views that don't fit into any particular bucket, because there are so many different perspectives out there, and we all get better and learn more if we can hear from each other.
Well, first of all, you guys had me when you mentioned dinner, because I'm a big fan of it, big supporter. But you go through how to put this together, and you know it's a great, really, you walk people through it step by step on how to do it. But I was looking at the worst case scenarios. Of course, as an American, that's where I go immediately. And these two things seem really possible to happen. One, you get a group of people who are, it's difficult to draw into a conversation, very possible, especially in that environment when you know people disagree with you. And the other, you get a group who quickly spirals into arguments and chaos, mm-hmm. which I think is, in this environment, really likely. How do you get around that stuff?
Yeah, so one way is that we, right off the bat, in our language and our outreach to our guests, we let them know that, you know, our intention here is not to win, is not to convert or change minds. It's just simply to take a step back and get to know each other as people first. And you can't, you know, when you're sharing your stories about your life experiences, those are things that people can't really argue, right? What you've experienced, what your life has been to you and how you perceive it is your truth. And so I think that folks come and they really internalize these stories from other people, and they now have these perspectives and the stories, and they leave the dinner as data points that they can reference when they're considering an issue or an idea, and that's been really valuable for them.
So do you have, this is the biggest, I've been on this kick for a few years now of trying to explain how right Martin Luther King was, that it's all about reconciliation, and we lose the minute we try to win, and everyone is trying to win right now. How is this going for you on explaining that and getting people to participate?
Yeah, well, first of all, Glenn, we love that message that you're spreading, that it's not about winning, it's about reconciliation. Sometimes the word reconciliation is perhaps a little too strong for the people who want to just come eat dinner and hear some perspective.
Sure, sure,
so
sure.
We really, yeah, we put the emphasis on it's about listening. It's about understanding and personal growth. And you've been talking about personal responsibility. And we really feel that as citizens, Justine and I felt the personal responsibility that if we were surprised by the election's result, that meant we weren't listening enough and we weren't understanding our country well enough. And we think that the people who sign up for dinners do a little bit of self-selection in that they feel that same responsibility. So it hasn't been too hard, actually, to get people in the mood to come together and hear each other out and share their perspectives as well without trying to gain points and win.
It's interesting. When I look at your program, I'm conflicted because part of me thinks, wow, what an amazing thing to do and take this big step and try this really innovative, cool thing that can really solve a problem that America is having right now. And the other part of me says, well, wait a minute, this is just what we're supposed to be doing. Like, this is just a regular American thing. We were supposed to get together with people, regardless of their politics, and have conversations with them and get to know people. Does it feel like you're doing both of those things simultaneously?
It does, yeah. I mean, we found that, you know, right now at this time in our state, in our country, it's a very divided time, right? The amplification of that division, distrust online for media, you know, people are seeking another way and they're tired of feeling anger, misunderstood. And MATA has become this refreshing avenue for them. But the hope is that that isn't going to be the case if this actually becomes an everyday thing, right? Sitting down at dinner and talking respectfully to each other. So we really see Make America Dinner Again as a blueprint for, you know, future conversations when things aren't as heated around politics. Maybe it'll be something else. I mean, we think there will always be some type of conflict in the world and in our country. So it's just getting people, you know, to practice active listening, to remembering what it's like to communicate with one another in a respectful way.
Would you guys come have dinner with me?
We would love to.
Let's do that. Maybe you guys bring some, friends from San Francisco, and I can bring some friends from Texas who they usually don't meet unless it's in Austin. And we can, you know, I would love to have a conversation with you, and I would love to have dinner with you.
We would love that, Glenn.
I think that we've always been a country that was e pluribus unum. We all come from different backgrounds. We all have different beliefs, but we all settled on a few, and I think they're the Bill of Rights, a few things that we all had in common that we all believed. And if we can just stop believing the worst of each other, and that's hard. I mean, that's really hard. If we can start believing the best intention out of most people, we'll be able to make it. But if we don't start talking to each other, we ain't going to make it.
Totally agreed, Glenn. And actually, yeah, I just wanted to mention that we just got a sign up from someone who heard about us on your show, because we do ask our guests when they sign up how they've heard about us, and they've mentioned Glenn Beck. So
oh, that's great.
Oh, wow.
Already you're helping us out.
Well, we're posting, you know, how to do this and you know, your whole kit. We're posting it at glennbeck.com. I'll Facebook it today. And I strongly urge people to get involved in Make America Dinner Again. How do they find you?
They can find us on our website.
Mm-hmm. Yes, makeamericadinneragain.com. Nice and simple, nothing fancy. And yeah, there are a lot of ways to reach out there. You can either email us directly, download the kit, or sign up for a dinner, either to host or be a guest.
I got to believe that is, if, for instance, in my little town in Idaho, it would be really hard to find somebody who is really hardcore liberal. I would imagine in San Francisco, it's really hard to find somebody like me. Does it get, I mean, it takes, depending on where you live, it takes real work, does it not?
It does. It's hard, but it's possible.
The website does a good job, too, of discussing how to find people and how to really walk through the process. It's a great idea, and you can just do this. You don't have to just, you know, you don't have to be in San Francisco to do this. You can start up your own right in your own area.
No, it's important that it happens everywhere.
Yeah, and what's the food selection for a Glenn Beck dinner here? Do you guys have suggestions? I was thinking maybe the Brooklyn barbecue controversy from Twitter over the weekend would be a good starting point. We can all join together to make fun of Brooklyn barbecue.
Well, we found one of our go-tos is pizza. That's something usually people can agree on. We do pull our guests ahead of time and get their dietary restrictions. So
what is
consider that.
What's the best thing that has come that you guys have personally witnessed? What's the most surprising thing that you were like, wow, was that amazing?
Well, there are a few, but one that stands out is we have two guests that, you know, have been to a couple of our dinners. The first one was the first time they met, and the second one, they actually really got to know each other. And these are two guests who seem like complete opposites in their build and their demeanor. One was a straight, middle-aged white man who is a real estate attorney and voted for Trump. And the other is a young transgender Korean adoptee who voted for Hillary. And it was pretty clear they have different politics. But when they sat down and exchanged stories, they actually found they had some things in common. They're both from the Midwest. They have, you know, one was from North Dakota, the other is from South Dakota, and they have a real shared love for that part of the country. They're both fathers, and they really strongly identified as being fathers. They said above anything else, that's how they identify. And they both also found they have a real love for our country, and they want the best for it. And those commonalities were enough for them to leave actually hugging each other and looking forward to the next time they'd meet. So we've seen that friendship blossom over the course of a few dinners, and it's been pretty cool.
I'm thrilled to have you guys on. I would love to have you again, and I would love to invite you here to Texas, and let's have dinner. And if you can't make it, then I'll come to San Francisco. But let's have dinner, because I think you guys are doing just a great, great service to our country. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, Glenn. We appreciate it.
God bless.
Glenn Beck.
You know, it's very interesting. We were just talking off air. One of the reasons why gay marriage became about love is because we started to talk to gay people. They started coming out of the closet. We allowed them to come out of the closet. And we were like, oh, well, you know, I have a friend. I have a sister. I have a brother. I have, you know, somebody. That, and I know they're not monsters and they don't hate me and, you know, all of this stuff. And so we, you know, recognize them as people instead of this mythical, you know, oh, they're all out to, you know, get your kids or whatever it is, right. You know, whatever the stupid things that held us apart. Now, we are having the same problem, except it's people who, you know, believe in guns, et cetera, et cetera.
I think we're seeing a little bit of movement on that, in that it's the same type of thing where people, when they meet gun owners, they think in their head of these scary people who want to shoot everybody, and that's not who they are. They're real people. David French was on last week and talked about a column he wrote for The Atlantic, a left-wing, largely a left-wing publication, to kind of just inform people on the left of how you'd even come into guns. Because I can tell you, as you know, someone who grew up in Connecticut, like, it was not at all part of my life or culture. And, you know, people don't, you know, in the Northeast, they don't understand it.
And it's the same crazy thing. All gay people are going to try to make us all gay or whatever that was. All gun owners want to just kill people and they just are bloodthirsty. Neither of those are true. We really need to start reaching out to each other.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck program.
Welcome, Mr. Pat Gray. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, my gosh. I'm great. Mm-hmm. I'm great. I'm great. So you are our one source for all Alex Jones news.
I like to be your one-stop shop for that. Yes, right. For all things Alex Jones.
I have noticed this. Yeah. Now, here's the reason why we're bringing this up today is because Alex Jones had some claim that he is now
He's got three strikes against him.
With YouTube.
With YouTube. And that they've banned his site now.
Which does not appear to actually...
And then he says they claim they're going to delete all 33,000 videos or whatever he's got on the site. They say, no, we didn't do any of that. We're not doing that.
So what's... I mean, there's a way to check this, right?
Well, I went to the channel and it seems to be accessible.
YouTube.
Unless I have a secret passageway in.
You're using your glenbeck.com address?
No, I just went there.
Yeah, but that's probably a glenbeck.com kind of computer.
Where you're in cahoots with him? Or
with
is it because
FBI.
You work for the CIA?
Oh, it's CIA, that's it's right. CIA, it's our CIA access. That's why you have that.
No, it seems to be accessible. And it seems... YouTube is denying it. They said, well, no, we didn't do any of that.
Can I tell you something that shouldn't be surprising to this audience at all? I mean, you know exactly how I feel about Alex Jones, but you also know exactly how I feel about the Constitution. I think YouTube has a right to
private business.
Private business. So they have a right to do whatever. I don't think they should. I don't know. What do you do? If somebody is really, really crazy, saying crazy things, which he is. I mean, just last week,
90% sure it's a deep state. This shooting
deep state
was
false
deep
flag.
State false flag.
He claims he didn't say any of those things. We have
played it.
The audio of what he said just last week.
Can you play it here?
Ladies and gentlemen, I can now officially say that it's about a 90% chance that the Florida event at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School that's killed 17 people and injured over 20 is a deep state false flag operation.
Okay.
He can't help himself.
He can't. And then he denies that he said, well, he denies categorically that he said they were crisis actors. But what are you saying when you're calling it a
deep state false flag operation?
Can we keep this on track though on freedom of speech? should YouTube be able?
Yes, I think they should. But they Stu brought up like a specific rule that I didn't know they had.
Ted Cruz is making an argument, and Ted knows the law very well.
yeah, a little bit.
So,
yeah.
But his argument is basically that if I'm allow me to butcher Ted Cruz's legal argument. YouTube gets an exemption essentially from their copyright problems, because obviously anybody can upload any video. So you could upload an entire movie and it would be up there, and that's a copyright problem. The way they get around that is there's an exemption for a site that is seen as completely neutral, essentially, right? Like this is it's an open operation, right? Anyone can post anything, so we're not censoring. So therefore, we get an exemption. If they start taking a political angle and start banning certain types of speech, they may lose that exemption, which would basically wipe the entire company out. They couldn't do that.
You can't.
They could get sued every 5 seconds.
Music rights, it would be
impossible.
They got to remain neutral. And so I think Jones is just using this to pad his numbers on his subscription.
It seems that way, right?
Probably. I think that's what he's doing.
So where do we, how do we, what do you do with people who, if Nazis were on and they were spewing all of this stuff on YouTube, which they probably are.
Definitely are, right? I mean, that's what YouTube was built on. It was built on people
Nazis?
With crazy, crazy Nazis and crazy socialists and Antifa people. And, that is, Alex Jones has a big business on YouTube because of that. He built 9/11 conspiracy theories were like one of the first YouTube hits.
Mm-hmm.
It really was built partially on that. And now they're trying to control it. But I think you could take a line too, where, you allow people to post things that aren't threats, and there are certain lines that they have in their inner user agreement that would be covered. But they talk about conspiracy theories. You allow people to post them. What I don't think you have to do if you're YouTube is recommend the videos through your algorithm. A lot of times this happens, and people. I was reading a story about this just the other day. You get on, you watch one of these videos, and then YouTube just keeps recommending you video after video after video. Mm-hmm. With Prager University, it's wonderful. Right? You watch
with
one.
Alex
and then,
Jones,
with
it's
Alex
not.
Jones, it's not. Because you go to Alex Jones and then you get to five Alex Jones and then you're down to some other conspiracy theorist who thinks Alex Jones is part of the deep state. And then where do you go?
It's really dangerous, though, when you start who decides whether it's conspiracy theory or there's actually something to it?
Okay, so
they would probably think the Tides Foundation stuff is conspiracy theory.
And they probably would. And I think that's why you have to be really careful on how you
do
it, right? It's got to be almost only blatantly obvious things, which, again, I know to us and them are completely different things. But we both would unite and say the 9/11 conspiracy theory stuff is...
Hopefully we would.
Actually, that's not even true. The Democrats, half the Democrats believed that at the time when George Bush was in office.
So let me... this sounded to me... I posted this weekend. This sounded to me like it was from a Philip K. Dick book, and one of those dystopian 1960s.
Yeah, he did the... What's that Amazon series?
Man in High Tower.
Man in High Tower,
And he also did Blade Runner. Okay, this is not a parody. I want to just play this. I have to play it off my laptop here. Hang on.
Still a long way to go with artificial.
Okay, listen to this.
ADL and the University of California at Berkeley's D-Lab have been working to develop a new approach to tackle online hate using the latest methods. The goal of the Online Hate Index is to help tech platforms better understand the growing amount of hate on social media and to use that information to address the problem. By combining artificial intelligence and machine learning with social science, the Online Hate Index will ultimately uncover and identify trends and patterns in hate speech across different platforms. We've just completed our first phase of research, and we found that the machine learning model identified hate speech accurately between 78 and 85% of the time. In the next phase of our project, we will look at specific targeted populations in a more detailed manner. We'll examine content on multiple social media sites, and we'll identify strategies to deploy the model more broadly. Mm. While there's still a long way to go with artificial intelligence and machine learning-based solutions, we believe the Online Hate Index will help tech companies better understand the extent of hateful content on their platforms by creating community-based definitions of hate speech. Mm.
Okay, so that's from the show?
That's from ADL. No. This is real.
That's real?
This is real. This is from the Anti-Defamation League. This is real with the University of California, Berkeley.
That is chilling.
That's real. It's not fake. It's real.
How do you know?
Identifying hate speech.
How do you know you're 78 to 85% accurate on that?
Right. Like, who decides? Again, who decides that?
Again,
right.
No, but I think that's a place where if you allow people to upload everything, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about your recommendations as a site, that is absolutely your determination of how you want to recommend the next thing. Mm-hmm. If you want to recommend only liberal videos, you can absolutely do that. I mean, there's no reason you can't do that. It's another thing to say we're not going to allow people to access those videos, because then you're taking a stance against...
This, I think, is worse.
Do you think of what they identified as hate speech applied to Donald Trump? I doubt it. And there is plenty, as we know, on every social platform.
Meaning that people hate Donald Trump.
About Donald Trump.
Right. Yeah. So, but you look at this. Now, remember, I said don't fear robots. Fear the goal of artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
If the goal is to identify hate speech, and we have in our machine learning and AI taught it that this is hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
It will not stop until it identifies all hate speech and stops all hate speech. We better be very sure and very careful on AI how we're identifying hate speech.
Yeah.
You know who? I think it's Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. One of them is using the Southern Poverty Law Center as their source on hate speech.
Right, which is obviously
David Barton extreme left. As
David
you
Barton is known as a terrorist or their worst hate speech category.
Yeah,
and that's one of them. And we also know that Media Matters is consulting, I think, YouTube and Google.
I mean, they're not legitimate organizations.
No, they're not
at all.
No, they're not.
Oh, by the way, I just got a notification from YouTube that they just took down the Pat Gray channel.
Oh, my gosh.
Completely.
Wow.
It's as if it never even existed.
What? Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wait, what about your 542,000 videos?
Right,
We should do something.
We should do something.
I think the only place you can get me now is on the Blaze Radio and TV Network.
Holy cow.
And you should do podcast more than just... on iTunes and SoundCloud and Stitcher.
Right. The only thing you can do to stop people, Pat, I think, in addition to those things, is just send you money directly.
Or you could do that.
Or buy your supplements.
Right.
Wait. If people would buy your supplements, your male vitality formula,
everything would be fine.
Plus, you'll be super vital.
Oh, God, really? Yeah.
Super vital.
Wow. Yeah. Do tests show? Yeah.
I'm going to take my shirt off later on the show.
Oh, wow.
Bad idea. Bad idea?
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Yeah.
Never mind. I'm not going to take my shirt off
okay,
on the
good,
show.
Okay, good, good.
The First Amendment guarantees your right to say stupid things.
But it doesn't guarantee we have to listen to them.
Share your intelligent thoughts with Glenn and Stu through social media, at Glenn Beck and at World of Stu.
This one came in from Jerry. He said, Glenn, what color are they wearing at the Oscars to stop all the graphic violence that they put in movies and video games? I think that was covered with orange. Still orange. Which, by the way, if anyone can get their hands on those orange lapel pins that they had, please let me know. We need these. We need to start collecting all of the anti-Second Amendment stuff for the museum. So if you see any anti-gun propaganda or anything else and you can get your hands on it, please send it to us and we can we will post an address. But we really need to preserve this. This is an amazing moment in history. And those orange lapel pins were important. John wrote in and said, I always skip the Oscars. What a waste of time watching Hollywood elite pat themselves on the back for producing violent and bloody movies and then crying about guns. Yeah, I loved it also that they were wearing clothes that, you know, makes it very hard not to notice a woman. And all of the things about being a woman and then talking about don't make women into objects. I thought that was an interesting thing as well. Glenn, I think we need a special counsel to investigate the need for another special counsel in light of the original special counsel. This is about the Trey Gowdy says a second special counsel is likely needed to investigate the DOJ. I don't know how many special counsels we can have investigating special counsels, but I'm kind of with you. Shane says the government should not be investigating the government. It's like letting criminals investigate the criminals. Amen. But who do you trust to do it? Who's going to do it? Is there anybody that we trust anymore, Stu? Anybody that you say, you know what? They'd be able to handle it. I'd trust them to do it.
I mean, it's hard, right? I mean, that's I think the point of this hour, maybe, right? You know, like we have to find places where we can find that trust between people, even if they disagree. You know,
but where? I mean, we have to find it in our neighbors, and then we can rebuild it. But is there anything that you trust? Is there anybody that you would say, any group of people, anything you could cobble together that you'd go, I'd believe that if they came out.
I think you have to go to like, you know, America's family. You got to go to like Bill Cosby. Then you'd find somebody there that can really.
No, I.
Yeah, I've been following the news lately. Is there?
Yeah,
any
no, there's
email?
A okay. There's an update.
Update
on that. A study out shows Americans blame government mistakes, not guns, for Florida shootings.
Yeah, I think we know that.
Shows the American people. I mean, this is a really easy one.
Because there are times you can sit here and have this discussion. The fact that the discussion on guns is happening after this particular shooting is so strange.
It's so strange.
I mean, it's a terrible example for people who want gun control. We had a million warning signs. We had all of these laws in place. We had crimes that were not reported, FBI tips that were not followed up on. Local police screwed this thing up.
And they're
in a
asking
million ways.
For more power.
And they want more power so they can screw it up more. They want to take guns away? I mean, there have been cases in which you could say, well, you know what, the gun is the bad thing. I never agreed with their arguments, but this is a terrible
this is not it.
Opportunity.
This is not it.
And again, this is just all built on the backs of they have willing participants in their theater.
The
right
one
now.
The one who could have made this case, the one thing was Vegas. There was a guy who was off the radar. There were no warning signs at all.
Yeah.
He seemed to do everything legally until he started shooting people.
Yeah, and that one's so difficult because I don't think there's even a proposed law that could have really stopped him. I mean, they always say, oh, you're going to ban all your guns. Well, yeah, I guess maybe in theory.
Right.
That one.
And that was, you know, well, if there was somebody else with a gun, they could have stopped him. No, uh-uh. In that case, no. I mean, unless you had a sniper rifle. And there's no, there was no law and no protection on that one.
We have to admit we're not infallible. Sometimes this,
yes,
we're going to have people who are
correct.
Really,
but that's the one to make the case on. Not this one, where law enforcement dropped the ball over and over and over and over again. It certainly could have been stopped, this last one, and the one before that in the Texas church. See you tonight at 5 o'clock, and then again 5:30, the news and why it matters only on theblaze.com/TV.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.